giving the Dharma, making the Dharma known, keeps alive a completely different dimension of human experience. Keeping the Dharma alive means that you keep the dimension of egolessness alive, the flavour of profound selflessness, the flavour of utter purity. That's what it keeps alive. Sometimes people, you know, say, you know, sometimes people feel that, well, you know, in the FWBO we don't do enough to sort of help people on an ordinary level and we should expand into social work and all that sort of thing. Well, fine, you know, if you really feel moved to do that, I think that would be very good, and I think that can be a way indeed of communicating the Dharma. I don't think one needs to make a hard separation necessarily between communicating the Dharma and having a kind of direct hands-on approach to alleviation of suffering. But you know, there are many bodies within Western society, well, all over the world, who do things to alleviate actual physical suffering. How much is going on in terms of the communication of the Dharma? I mean, I don't just mean the FWBA, but if you look around the world, actually, there isn't, by comparison, a lot of Dharma going on. We should be very, very clear about that. And there are people, many, many people, many, many, many people who are suffering because they haven't encountered the Dharma. I remember years ago Bhante talking to some clergymen about this, and they were asking about, they were very interested in the FWBO, and they were asking about the sort of social work dimension, what do we do with the casualties in society. And Bhante, one of Bhante's replies was, well, our hands are full at the moment with existential casualties. And I think that's a really good phrase. You know, there are social casualties, there are also existential casualties, you know. And, you know, these often overlap, we know. In time, of course, if we really do communicate the Dharma vividly and really proclaim it, who knows what effect the Dharma could have on public life, you know, on a wider sphere. Even if you give it then, just communicate it in a very ordinary way to just one other person, it's an incredible thing, with all sorts of reverberations that are all, you know, hidden, that you only discover perhaps years later. We might not even discover in this lifetime. And I must say, my own faith and confidence in the Dharma and the power it can have to effect a radical transformation in all aspects of somebody's life, that really came home to me in India, living and working with the Buddhist community in India, the so-called ex-untouchable Buddhist community. Just seeing the effect that the Dharma had in transforming their whole attitude to themselves, their attitude to one another, their attitude to life generally, and all the, you know, social and cultural transformations that took place because of Dr. Ambedkar's conversion to Buddhism. And the fact that Ambedkar was such a hard-headed, well, kind of rationalist and humanist, gave me a lot of confidence in the Dharma. The fact that somebody like him could see the Dharma, you know, from very, very early on in his life as the key to social and even political transformation, and to bring his people out of hell. Well, that was that's quite something to see. And people used to tell me, people who, when they were around in the early days of the conversion movement, I asked them, well, how did you feel when you converted? You know, just that moment of going for refuge to the Three Jewels. And they smiled, liberation. Liberation from hell. And I said, was there any immediate material change? No, quite the contrary. In our village, we were boycotted because we'd become Buddhist. The other castes boycotted us. We couldn't buy food in our village. But we felt liberated. We felt this great energy and self-respect. And everything came from that. Amazing.